And hello, everyone. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. I'm sorry to report that Stormy Daniels couldn't make it this week. She's doing the rounds, but she couldn't come, but she's happy to...
Does she have anything to add, like, really anything to add after everything?
I don't think so. I think Anderson covered all
the
bases.
I think that was a mic drop. Yeah.
So, we'll be talking about
her lawyer, though. Tunstad. We wish he was here.
Talking about the fallout for
anyway.
Ages,
yeah. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can listen to us live online, too. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the little icon at the top right hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Now, today we're going to talk about why the Canadian government seems to be not going anywhere fast to guard against election interference in our next election, which is actually only 18 months away now. And then we will head out to BC, where the pipeline protests really got heated last week. We're arresting MPs now, so we'll talk about whether that debate is being helped or hindered. And then finally, should we lower the voting age to 16? There's a private members bill at Queen's Park now, but there are a lot of stereotypes about dumb kids to overcome still, sadly. But first, the ongoing drama about how our data is being used and how it might be being used against us by Facebook and corporations like Cambridge Analytica. And we learned some new names this week, like Aggregate IQ, and there are other companies that seem to be helping themselves to our data in no small ways. And this is all, of course, helping to foster, you know, the fake news phenomenon and, you know, the Russian campaign to destabilize democracies in the West. You know, you're a bigger Facebook user than me. So
I think so. Yeah. I would say marginally bigger, but yeah, I am on it quite a bit.
I'm just wondering, like, have you had, like, second thoughts? Are you hashtag delete Facebook?
I'm a user in that I tend to use it for this show, and I'm also in communication with people I know. I have a separate account for my family. And interestingly, the family account was the one that was surprising to me because, you know, they were talking about you should download your history, which I didn't do. But I did check my – there's a history in there that will tell you places that you've logged on. And as you know, because I've spoken about it, it was in the UK last year. And you can follow my trail through the whole country where I was as to where I logged on. I'm like, that's interesting. That's an interesting pattern. I know where I was. Will tailor things to where you are, but again, it depends on how tied in you are. I had a problem with my cell phone, reloaded the operating system, and I did not put Facebook or Messenger back on it. And that was before all of this happened, just because Messenger in particular would make it behave badly. Now, never mind my tech problems, but I'm sure there was lots of other information. All the things that they're saying that you shouldn't do, like the games and the quizzes, I've never really done. But at the same time, I mean, it's Musk. Not Musk.
Elon Musk is
Elon
Tesla.
What was it? Trusk?
Tesla.
Trusk.
Yeah.
Tesla deleted
SpaceX.
And the Tesla accounts. So, yeah. I mean, and he probably knows Zuckerberg, right? They're both players. They're both millionaires and probably go to Davos together. But where they share information they got from your Facebook account. So concerned, yeah, probably, but I'm an old school user in that I'd never, well, I would say most of the stuff is fake. My name is fake. Birthday is fake. And now the Facebook knows that because they listen to this show, they're going to get rid of it. But a fantastic communication tool, but with all that stuff going on behind the scenes, which has now exploded. I mean, right. We all knew it was going on. Now it's boom.
If I may,
yeah, absolutely.
Musk is kind of a cowboy, so... It doesn't surprise me that
sending
he would,
cars into space just for
yeah,
laughs.
So I mean that's going to be the real test of it. If everybody starts like sort of turning their back on Facebook, and the data seems to indicate so far that not many people are, and part of it is because, and I've been listening to a lot of people talk about this, is that, you know, Facebook is so integral to our daily digital lives. A lot of people use their Facebook account and then to sign into other accounts.
Yeah.
You know, like Shopify or Spotify and all these other different apps you use. It's all like
it's easy.
It's all spider webs back to the center, which is Facebook.
Rather than have that pain in the butt thing, we have to create a new account. You just use Facebook, and I've used it a couple times in the Mercury Tribune, but that's my limit. But I'm old fashioned. I don't know. But
I'm old fashioned. I use my Facebook account to log into the newspaper website. Gotcha.
Yeah. But it was the other interesting thing too is that I did find apps that were there that I did not download or install. They were just there and conveying data somewhere.
Yeah.
So I shut them down because I think every media site was like, here's what you should do if you want to secure your Facebook a bit more privately. Right. But I've got a big block list too, mind you. But
my point with Musk, though, is that, he can afford to sort of unplug from Facebook. And I bet you any money, like 6 months from now, there will be a new account and everything, and it'll be like, or he'll be right back to normal.
He'll have built a completely separate social network that does the same thing.
It's PR-y and PR-y. It's good press for him, and he's someone who can get good press fairly easily, so he doesn't really need Facebook to help promote himself. He's fairly good at promoting himself. The scary part is like how, and we'll get into this in a second when we talk about the Canada side of things, but how entrenched, like, we seem to be, because Christopher Wiley, who's the whistleblower, that kind of he came out around the same time that Channel 4 investigative report came out and said, you guys don't know the half of it, and started talking to anyone who would listen. He worked for the Liberals, the federal Liberals, during the Venn diagram period between Stephen Dion and Michael Ignatieff in 2008-09, and he proposed, taking the Liberals' own voter and supporter data and merging it with, data mining from various social media apps and various other things, and kind of create a Frankenstein data list of supporters and potential supporters. And the Liberals have kind of gotten the third degree about that, understandably so, but apparently they shut him down.
Yeah.
Early on, and this is almost 10 years ago now.
Well, and the Tories in particular are trying to create this link between Wiley and what's been going on now. But, all of the parties use hired guns. They're just like disposable nerds that know how to do the thing.
Disposable nerds.
Seriously, they pay them a lot of money and say, build us a database, and they go, okay, right. And it either works out. Or then there's the other nerds like Pierre Poutine, who we still don't know who it is, but doing the same kind of thing. They all do it. The NDP insists that they don't, but I think they may be doing something else. I think they're using third-party software, probably on Windows 98. I don't know, whatever.
It's important to remember Pierre Poutine was ultra-lo-fi.
But yet created a disturbance in the force.
Was able to create chaos, but Pierre Poutine's thing was call Rack 9, buy burner phone, buy vanilla credit card, use fake name.
Yeah.
And that was all there is to it. This is like ahead in terms of sophistication, but you're right. All the parties do this.
A conspiracy from the Telegraph era, but yes, yeah.
Yeah, basically.
This just in.
The same thing could have been done with like a Xerox machine and, a lot of light work 10 years ago. But, that was almost 10 years ago now. But the point is, the political parties, you don't really hear anyone calling, like, we got to get Facebook out of the campaign. We got to get, less social media stuff. And you're right about the conservatives. Conservatives have been copying not so much the Trump playbook in terms of what Cambridge Analytica was doing for the Trump campaign, but more in the idea of, like, all this meme warfare stuff.
Absolutely.
And
An example would be Ontario Proud.
Right.
Which supposedly is one person.
Quote unquote nonpartisan, but
but thousands of followers, and it's all, Kathleen Wynne, what a piece of garbage. I'm paraphrasing, but that's everything's like,
That's a fairly accurate but condensed version.
Share
of,
if you agree, and thousands of people share it. It's like, I really hate her. Why? Well, I don't know. I just hate her. Like, guess I saw a meme with, because Doug Ford's going to fix it. Yeah. You reduce it to this base level of a thing that's easily shared, easily digested, and then it becomes.
But no one's calling it out. No one's saying, like, no more campaigning on Facebook because you're switching off a huge potential audience. And they want to use the tools. Then, it's like old-fashioned political dirty tricks. It's like you want to do the dirty tricks. You just don't want to be caught doing the dirty tricks.
But when you've got investigations going on in the U.S. and the U.K. on, yeah. on that larger level. It was like, well, did you fudge the EU referendum? And I think there's two investigations in the U.K. One is about the Brexit, and one is about using, you know, the use of these things for mm-hmm. political purposes, and digging a bit deeper on there. But the American one is they're looking into, like, proper election interference, in particular, because this is they're an international firm with Wiley. The people come from all over. It's British nationals from other countries. You can't, in the States at least, use a group of foreigners essentially to do this work. So, you wonder whether will this be the thing that finally trips up Trump and company. Probably not, I think the UK will do a much more thorough job of looking into it than the US will, because that's just how they roll.
Right. It's almost ironic that the UK is going harder on privacy rights than the US, which is, it's typically been the other way around. It's the thing about the Cambridge Analytica angle is it's the fact that they had access to Facebook data. Almost surreptitiously, they had access to data they really shouldn't have had, that they were able to get it through, you know, skullduggery kind of style means. They had to
play this game.
50 million user data from 50 million users, and were able to use that to manipulate their advertising. Again, nobody's saying that this was being done on behalf of Russia, although there are certainly some sketchy connections. But there were also some very sketchy connections in Cambridge Analytica, because who's the head of Cambridge Analytica? Steve Bannon and Robert Mercer. And if you don't know the name Robert Mercer, you've certainly seen the results of his check writing skills, because just about every major Republican nominee and candidate has been a beneficiary of his fundraising efforts and his own personal back pocket, up to and including Donald Trump, who, you know, cannot be bought, his words. But that's the scary part, is that Cambridge Analytica seemed to have access to things they should not have had access to. And then meanwhile, Zuckerberg, and it seems like a lot of people at Facebook are unwilling to concede either A, their security measures are not up to snuff and they're not protecting people's security as well as they should, or B, they're unwilling to admit that this thing they created, Facebook, is a monster that's gotten away from them.
Mm-hmm.
You may not...
Because the bucks keep rolling right?
You may not have created Godzilla to step on buildings, but that's what he's doing. I saw the interviews with him, or I saw at least one interview with him, one on CNN.
They're probably all the same, right? I really had no idea.
It did sound like he was workshopped very well by the publicity team at Facebook. But... yeah, it's just like, well, I don't know. Like, you know, we're trying our best and we're trying to do things. And if I am the person that can best talk to Congress, then I will certainly go and talk to Congress. And it's like, no, you're the CEO of Facebook. The buck stops with you. They want you to come and explain stuff to them. You frickin' go. And the same for the UK. It seems like he's going to talk to Congress, but he's not going to go to the UK. But I think that's because, as you said, the UK MPs are going to go harder on him than people in the U.S. Congress.
Yeah, and it's almost as if, I mean, these come with Cambridge Analytica and Aggregate IQ, which is supposedly a subset of it, although they're not admitting to any...
Subcontractor.
They're not admitting any links. Right. In fact, everybody is denying everything.
Yeah.
So they say, well, you usually use them. It's like, well, I might have. I don't know. Because Ted Cruz has used the system, and... John Bolton, actually the new face on the block, the new national security advisor.
I wouldn't call him the new face on the
block.
Well,
no, he's new in terms of his position anyway, no.
But, he's been on the Captain Crunch box for 40 years.
But and it would seem the main problem in the UK was the way it sounded like there was like another group created and then money laundered. So that almost is beyond the whole data thing. But it's the same gang working for these companies. And supposedly one of the, God, I can't remember his name, but on Twitter, one of the people with the Believe campaign, which is tied into these companies, was outed. Supposedly it was the weirdest outing of anybody, and not just political history, but it's like, oh, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and by the way, this person is gay, and blah, blah, blah. In a tweet, it was like almost Trump style, right? I was like, what?
You don't mean, like, Peter Thiel, do you?
No.
Okay.
Sorry, I wish I had I had scripted down the name. Because
that is kind of what happened to Peter Thiel. he was outed. Because he's part of this, too, apparently. Peter Thiel helped, you know, he helped bring down Gawker, but it was like one of his companies had apparently had access to some of the same data through Cambridge Analytica, which was weird. But yeah, the belief stuff is the next level stuff because they called it, some of the UK publications are calling it laundering because the official Leave campaign had a certain cap. And yeah. Then, you know,
we're just going to create another company.
Third parties could spend money to do advertising and things, but there couldn't be coordination between the official Leave campaign and any third parties because that would mean they would share a common spending gap. But it seems like there was coordination that they were using this Believe
They had a big donor and
Cambridge Analytica or no, through Aggregate IQ.
Yeah.
Which again is seems to be like the Canadian subcontractor of Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah, I heard it described as a spinoff. Now, it's funny because if you go to their website, it says, we have never been nor are we a part of Cambridge Analytica.
Right.
But I don't know if that's just ass coverage or what. But
well, I mean, they weren't like a wholly owned subsidiary. No,
but it's the same player.
But the way it was described, right. Yeah. The way it was described is Wiley, who was with the Cambridge Analytica when it was under a new name, I think it was SLC or something, but then reached out to this guy, Jeff Sylvester, who worked with him at the Liberal Party and said, hey, I'm working for this thing called SLC, and, you know, we're doing, his words, psychological warfare on behalf of NATO, and, you know, we need to, like, a Canadian branch, and then, you know, you get Aggregate IQ, and several years later, they launder money for Brexit.
I don't know. I get the feeling that this dude's maybe made his millions, and he's just like, oh, and you know what? By the way, this is all completely corrupt. You need to know. But this happens all the time. People find their conscience and throw a big boomerang and a wrench into the works, and like it just goes. So,
well, I mean,
I don't know if it's going to actually bring anybody down. It's going to. It's definitely not Facebook down big financially. They've taken a hit this week, and the stock exchange is like, not so much, not so fast, Facebook. But you should listen to Grandma. She's like, I told you that thing. You know,
but on the other hand, Facebook has kind of guarded itself too, because remember, Facebook owns Instagram, and Instagram is doing fine, thank you very much. And a lot of people don't make the connection between Facebook and Instagram.
The spinoff.
Well, Instagram started as a separate thing, and then Facebook bought them. But
the acquisition.
But I mean, it is concerning that you have a lot of people who are involved in the early days of Facebook who are now saying, "Yeah, delete Facebook," and they don't like what it's
definitely
become.
Don't have it on your phone, because everywhere you are, everywhere you go, be it in the UK or Canada, it knows, man. So.
Oops. Anyway.
Yeah. Go back to a rotary.
Go back to a rotary. Carry a rotary phone around with you.
It's just the Russians are listening.
That sounds balling. Anyway.
I'm going to start doing that.
Good. Go for it.
Rise to the challenge.
So this brings us to the Canadian section of this. I mean, obviously, there's concern about, you know, privacy.
Private
but
pirates.
But what's interesting is, like, even the base level stuff, and Chantal Hébert wrote about this on the weekend, that there hasn't even been an elections, a chief electoral officer chosen. And that office has been vacant for 15 months. Now, the work of Elections Canada, you know, goes on. But in terms of, you know, having somebody in the top office for a year and a half is highly unusual for this agency that is going to suddenly become very important in the next year as we start getting ready for the next federal election, which is a year and a half away.
Yeah, say what you want about Stephen Harper. At least he picked the next chief electoral officer, right away. Like, there was no waiting period. This has been what?
Promptly and efficiently, like a robot. I'm just kidding.
Well, yeah, sure, but I mean, that's... I think he probably had more respect for the position and the mechanisms behind it.
Debatable.
Well, yeah, but true. I guess that's another conversation. I'm just saying you have to wonder why the Liberals would sit on this for so long. They were talking when I was looking to the, you know, future topic we're going to talk about, the voting at 16. They spoke to, my goodness, it was Scott Bryson. And they asked him about the voting age, and he said they'll be coming forward with legislation to, quote, strengthen the Canada Elections Act. Well, I mean, you could start strengthening Elections Canada, everything, if you just picked, you know, chief electoral officer no real legislation required for that. But it would seem that they're not – there isn't just a – they're not just holding off on that. There's a backlog on positions, and they're – I sense that maybe they want to tie some announcement, like what Bryson maybe was talking about, to the filling of this job, right? They're going to say, oh, we're going to do this. It won't be proportional representation.
Well, Bryson is a temp, right? Because Katrina Gould's out on
Yeah, exactly. So he can say whatever, right? But it's but he's hinting at there's something coming in the pipe, but it's – you need a chief electoral officer. Not standalone, but up until – I did a bit of research on this, and I suppose – I didn't know this. Up until 1920, it was the government of the day were the ones that ran the election. Like, they created this 100 years ago so an election would be run in a nonpartisan way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's a void. Who is the temp? Do you know who is filling in for the – chief electoral officer right now?
I don't know.
See, we don't know. But this is
it. Never came up.
It could be one of the most important positions, if not the most important position in the Canadian election, because it's not just.
Chances are, though, this person didn't think they were going to be in at the temporary for 15, almost 16 months.
Yeah, so that shows you how much is like we don't know who that is. But I'm sure the name was brought up in passing, but. And they're not – I mean, that's the thing is that this person, whoever it is, isn't just responsible for the election itself. There's all the other factors, you know, getting people to come out and vote. And then, of course, being a watchdog for stuff like everything from dangling chads to aggregate IQ or Pierre Poutine, right? I mean, it's not just election day. So come on, Justin. Come on, gang. Like what's the holdup? Right?
Come on, Justin.
Come on, Justin. We know you're listening. We know you listen to our show.
No, but it's. I mean, yeah. They're currently working on Bill C-33 as well, which is basically the Undo the Fair Elections Act. Which
that's the one that Bryson was alluding to. I don't know.
But you're right. It's returning a lot of powers to the chief electoral officer. Remember that the Fair Elections Act. Said that the chief electoral officer basically can't advocate about voting anymore, that investigations could not be done under the Elections Canada umbrella. You know, that was kind of controversial.
Was that under Kingsley? Because he used to do the – it was Jean-Pierre Kingsley, mm-hmm. the prior mm-hmm. CEO, we'll call him, and he used to do the rounds all the time. And then mm-hmm. I kind of remember that now when I was a regular watcher of the PNP, Power and Politics, and there was a thing about him getting – Oh, we can't have him on anymore. Like, oh, really? So the Somewhat Fair Elections Act? No. So that's – are we going to do the whole thing or just piecemeal?
Sorry to put you on the spot there.
It's like, what's happening?
No, they're undoing – I mean, the things like you'll be able to vouch for people again. You can use your voter ID as ID. You're voting – the voter's card you get, you can use that as ID again. So a lot of the crazy BS about the Fair Elections Act, which – wasn't really about solving the things that were or the situations created by the robocall scandal that kind of spurned it on. But you know, this is a big, not a big change, but I mean a reshuffle back. And so you'd think that there would be some immediate need to have a chief electoral officer in place. Not only that, but this was part of the Liberal platform, and it's like 2.5 years, and it's still not done. It was read. The first reading of this was in the fall, and now here we are in March 29 today, and
it keeps getting backburnered. Eh?
Yeah, and it's basically backburnered. And when this was introduced, everyone was like, "Council of Canadians, Federation of Canadian Students, or Canadian Federation of Students, one of the whichever." One that
them
is
them student kids,
the student kid. Yeah, yeah. We're like issued press release. Okay, this is great news. Finally, we're getting this back on track. And you know, a lot of attention was eaten up in the fact that electoral reform didn't happen. But this was also another big piece of the Liberal agenda that they were going to undo these the Fair Elections Act changes. And it seems like an easy fix because we know there was widespread dislike of those changes. So. You know, it seems like a pretty easy layup, but you know, what's the whole, I'm not saying there's anything nefarious going on. I'm saying there's like incompetence going on or laziness or something. I don't know.
The whole idea of filling this position is like so people don't get the impression that something is going on.
Right.
But yeah, the first hit I got on this in terms of articles and reading up for this was Kingsley, Jean-Pierre Kingsley, one of the former chief electoral officers, a year ago commenting in the Hill Times saying he was disappointed that no successor was named for, I guess it was Mark Maynard then,
yeah.
Right? Who was...
Yeah.
Did he retire to the age? There's an age restriction on this too, which is odd, but I think it's like, well, that's like 65 or something. I thought all of those were gone. Like you can just work till whenever, but this one, it seems,
no, I think it's because the they don't want. Supreme Court is still age restricted. I think that's why Bev McLaughlin had to step down.
75.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, and that, I think when that was established, it was probably you were really old at 75, but now I saw Beverly McLaughlin interviewed and it's like, man, she could probably keep going.
Mm-hmm.
She'd be like, who's the one in the American Supreme Court that's been there?
Oh, Ruth Bader Ginsburg
has been there for like 100 years or something. She's like, no, leaving.
She was working out with Stephen Colbert the other day. So.
Oh, really? There you go.
So it's she's
she should come up here.
She's all right.
We need a chief electoral officer. She should come here.
I'm not sure how that would work. But
honorary Canadian.
Also, I think a lot of Americans would freak if she were to suddenly leave the court, even if it was just for...
just for a day for to run the election.
Yeah, if she... yeah.
Okay, we trust you, Canadians. So.
I have tried to search here between our talkings for the who is currently the interim head of the chief electoral officer, and I can't find it. So, I mean, that's kind of problematic.
That shows you how much they care. We want to know.
It should be an easy to Google. It should be one of those things where you don't have to go to a website to get the answer. Google just says, here's the stupid information. Like in the good old Ask Jeeves, Dave. You know,
yes,
here's the answer.
Ask Jeeves.
Here's the answer you're looking for.
Alta Vista told me.
Oh, yeah. I found it on Alta Vista last night. It's one of the great ongoing gags from Parks and Rec.
I nominate Adam Donaldson, chief electoral officer.
Oh, man.
You got that, Justin? Because we know you're listening. No.
I'm pretty sure that'd be like a Ben Carson style appointment. Get into trouble for ordering
it. My luggage?
Ordering the dinette
set. I don't
know.
It's over there.
Oh, man.
I left it out in the front of the UC.
Maybe. We'll see. Okay, we're going to take a break really quick, and then we will come back with the rest of the show. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Ohne Menti, Wochustork, Wemade, Krusche, Wann haben die Welt verhippest, früher noch verdirrt, allanger Zeit. Omens is verranst, wird nicht stehen kein Papier. Nor wild und narrisch ist dein böser Träum. Wir werden leben, sei wie sei, dein Soffen sei nach Omens Bäum. Am Israel
And that is from a CD new to the station called Yiddish Glory, The Lost Songs of World War II. And I don't know if you speak Yiddish or know any, but the song was called Purim Gifts for Hitler. And that's in honor of, well, it's not often we play a song on this show, let on the station that's got the word Hitler in it. But it was, I assure you, it was anti if you read the lyrics in English. But it is Passover on starting on the weekend and also Good Friday, Easter. So happy celebrations to all. And it's the high holidays collide this time of year, so full moon and spring. And maybe we'll play some more of that in the future. If not, I'll just listen to it on my own. I think that might be the case. So, no more songs about Hitler, guys. What are you doing?
Well,
yeah, not pro.
No more pro Hitler music. We learned our lesson.
Somebody's going to write to us and want the lyrics in English. I want to know what that said. I don't know. So.
Well,
it's a good CD anyway, and it's actually Canadian, believe it or not. So,
yeah, not enough Yiddish Canadian music. I have nothing to add. Anyway,
no banjos.
There's no banjos.
No banjos.
no banjos. Lots of Yiddish. Okay. So Elizabeth May got arrested. It's not anything terribly concerning. I mean, unless. You know, the Green Party leader, Green MP, only Green MP gets arrested. But this has to do with Kinder Morgan. And the pipeline they're building, the Trans Mountain Pipeline out there in BC, it's being expanded. It's already there, but they're expanding it to carry three times the amount of bitumen from the Alberta tar sands out to Burnaby so it can be shipped overseas. As you can imagine, there's considerable controversy there, and it's also the source of interprovincial tensions, shall we say. But last weekend was kind of the climax of this particular protesting season, because Kinder Morgan had to finish work on this particular prep work, getting ready for the expansion. They had to finish it by March 26th because a restriction goes into effect to stop construction and stop any undue influence on migratory birds, which I found interesting. building a pipeline, we were worried about the birds. Anyway, so action went up. 172 people in all were arrested in like 1 week. 172 people, and it was because you cannot publicly, members of the public were not allowed within like 5 meters of where they're building this terminal.
Yeah, so most of those arrests, and I believe all of them, were they just kind of haul you in, get you out of the picture,
yeah,
carry you away, essentially, as Elizabeth May was, arm in arm with the cops, and then they let you go a half an hour later. So they probably, none of this will go to court, I would think, unless you were vandalizing or assaulting people and they caught you. So it's more of a,
right,
let's call it a ceremonial arrest, because that's pretty much what it was. There's lots of people, thousands at these protests. The kickoff was that, as you were saying about the migratory birds and that, there was, did it pass on, I think it was the 10th of March was the kickoff of the blockades for the indigenous people, that an appeal had gone to court about the clearing of trees and whatnot, and it didn't pass. Now, Burnaby, this week, I think it was on Tuesday, they said they're going to challenge the decision that was upheld by the Federal Appeal Court. It's going to go to the Supreme Court now.
Yes.
Burnaby in particular and some of the other places are arguing that what happens with something that has federal jurisdiction, it supersedes everything. So the pipeline's going through. All the bylaws that would involve things like trees and waterways or whatever are pretty much null and void or completely ignored. Burnaby's like, we don't like this. A lot of the mayors, I know Vancouver for sure. Still Gregor Robertson? Yeah, I guess so. I want to say that, but
I'll Google
the names
it
on the spot. No, because they haven't had their elections there, right? But put it this way, tons of people are still very much not happy about this. Ironically,
Gregor Robinson is still the mayor.
Yes. Two NDP governments going at it, essentially. One of them backed by the Greens, which adds a little bit of a wrinkle or a twist. Rachel Notley said that the decision against Burnaby and the, sort of stopping the pipeline is, quote, a victory for the economy. Now, in a bit of an ironic twist as well, the BC NDP have gone all in this week on liquid natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
Right, which is, do you pick your fuel, right? They're going to give subsidies to the giant corporations. I'm not sure if one of them is Kinder Morgan. It's a bit of, a bit of a twist there with this. It's
what
like
twist?
Which horse do you back? Do you back oil? Do you back gas? Is it all the same? It's this really weird struggle and fight going on. And also coming from Trudeau's excuse for this in terms of the National Climate Change Plan was that they've agreed to twin the existing pipeline, and that somehow is going to help with the climate change plan. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, you're going to say you're going to quit smoking, but we're going to give you a carton of cigarettes for a week for 10 years, and then maybe you'll quit, right? It's like, it's so contradictory, everything in this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, beyond that, a lot of the groups, and it was an NDP was the MPP as well arrested? Kennedy Stewart
was arrested.
So it wasn't. They were actually arrested together.
They were palling around.
So, yeah, exactly. So pals on the picket lines.
Picket pals. Yeah, there you go.
Picket pals. So, but he was from BC as well, I tell you, right? There's this. I think there's a lot of introspection going on with people. Like, well, who do I support here? And as I was mentioning about the liquid natural gas, it's that may actually bring the government of BC down, because the Greens are like,
right,
okay, we're going to we're going to back them for now. They're doing a bit of a wait and see. We're going to back them on this. We're not happy with it. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to pull the plug. But it's precarious at best because of that. If that goes through, it may not be the pipeline fight that brings the government down. It will be the liquid natural gas fight. So one resource versus another resource, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I threw a lot in there, but it's like it's this massive, like, but draw the Venn diagram.
I'm not sure the NDP in BC were as hardcore against pipelines as the Greens were, if I remember that correctly. I think that they were, the NDP was against it in principle, but in the interest of sort of, you know, good jobs and making money and labor and that kind of thing, they could live with it. Yeah. The Greens are extremely anti-pipeline, and I think there was an understanding on the NDP's part that, you know, hey, as long as we're, you know, we can probably live with there not being a pipeline too. And then we get good support, right? Yeah. And then, of course, this has gone, I think, this is kind of where the federal government is supposed to step in because there's kind of no way this can end with these two for sort of fighting it out on their own because Alberta wants this pipeline. In fact, Rachel Notley and the Alberta NDP are like kind of doubling down on this getting done by sort of factoring into their budget deliberations. And by the way, did you know that this time next year the NDP are having to probably fight for re-election against the United Conservative Party?
Yeah, because this is the kind of things that Jason Kenney seizes upon the new leader of the, what are they called?
United Conservative Party.
Oh, the Alberta Conservative Alliance. Whatever they're called. You know that new party that Jason Kenney leads? Yeah, you can't reuse your name. But he's still going to say that they're against pipelines when it's Notley is proving time and again that she's
like,
not.
She's like fighting for pipelines.
Yeah, it's weird.
Like people also who are NDP. It's bizarre. But the question too is like how can Jason Kenney turn the tables on the BC government and make them take pipeline? You know, it's bizarre.
Doug Ford style. They've ruined everything.
Maybe. I mean, we'll have to see how that goes in Ontario, whether or not styles translate, as it were. But this is kind of where the federal government needs to step in, and Justin Trudeau and the Liberals have rubber stamped the pipeline, and you know what? They've either got to stand by that, or they've got to say, okay, we have people in BC who are really, really dead set against this, so
yes.
How can, you know, what has to be done? Because we have two forces that are kind of in their corners right now and nobody's really shaking loose and all anyone can talk about is escalation, although people don't really want to go that direction either.
No. And this also goes against the whole course of Indigenous reconciliation.
Yeah. Right?
Because another one of the main, there's obviously environmentalist and Indigenous group crossover, but they're, you know, the majority of them, I think there was one group that came out and said, oh, great jobs. And but the rest are like, you know, you name it. It's like, we don't want this on our land. There would always list the amount of leaks that have happened to the existing pipeline. The new one's going to be more underground, I think, than the other one. It's like that stuff's almost impossible to control. And it's supposedly there were leaks on the original. I was going to call it Kinder Mountain. Ooh, Kinder Mountain. Sounds like a sounds like a surprise you get at Easter. Trans Mountain.
My nieces would love a Kinder Mountain.
A Kinder Mountain. We should invent that and make our millions, and then we could just do these shows all the time. Where was I going with that? Yeah, there was
Kinder Mountain.
There's been leaks in the Kinder Mountain. Kinder Morgan Mountain pipeline that have never been cleaned up.
No.
Right? It's just like, you know.
If they're detected at all.
It's the cost of doing business. And that's the thing. I think if they built this and they had solid detection, what were they talking about the water pipeline? I think it was in Jordan. They've got drones monitoring it. They're treating water like gold or like oil in a pipeline. It's like if they can do that intense monitoring in a country like Jordan where water is like gold on a pipeline so the water doesn't leak, why can't they do it with this? And they'll say, well, because it's underground.
Also cost. Also
cost. What are they worth?
Probably getting the paperwork. I mean, look
donate at donate a day's pay of barrels.
Look at all the hoops they have to jump through to get this going. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Supreme Court. If the Supreme Court even decides that, I'm not sure if the Supreme Court is even going to hear the case. I think that's just I think they're waiting for the Supreme Court to decide if they're going to hear the case. Because I think the mayor Corrigan has a pretty good point that, you know, that this is stepping on local rights. It's, you know, local bylaws are freezing local bylaws so this can go through. And, you know, Canada isn't like big on sort of like the rights of the local governments. That's kind of not, that's been more of a U.S. thing versus a Canadian thing. But at the same time, I think a point can be made, especially since this argument is coming down between, you know, which government is going to get what they want and where the, you know, what side the feds are on. It's a mess.
And I was going to just mention part of this too, the environmental angle beyond the pipeline, is that if I understand it right, once the oil is in a tanker, then the tanker's out in the bay, it's like the tanker insurance or whatever is responsible for cleaning that up. So there's other elements to it too. It's not just Kinder Morgan who are obviously challenged. And does part of it deeks down in the States as well. I'm surprised they're not playing that up a bit. There's, I think a part of the new part is going to go down into the U.S. It's like, why wouldn't you just roll with that, right? It's a multinational, right? I don't think they're not...
Kinder Morgan?
Yeah.
Sure.
So, as they all are, but...
And then... part of this too, the federal side is I did discover that there are apparent Catherine McKenna, who's the environment minister, proposed new rules last month for a 2-year deadline for every energy project to be approved or rejected. So I mean,
not 40 years or whatever how long it's been. Right?
Well, yeah, that this is only going to sort of exacerbate, I think, these pressures because environmental groups, you know, want to have a say, indigenous groups want to have a say, and you know, the reason these are things are taking long to get into development isn't necessarily because the people don't want to build them. It's not like the frickin' grocery store in the East End where everybody's waiting for Loblaws to decide. The oil companies obviously want to build these pipelines.
Yep.
But environmental groups and indigenous groups and, you know, just concerned citizen groups, you know, generally, people just want to make sure that, you know, these things are fully understood before shovels go in the ground and pipes go in the ground. And, you know, can you do that in 24 months on these, like, major projects? That
There's
seems
no
a bit...
Too many jurisdictions. Yeah. There's just no way.
I mean, I think a lot of stuff will get under those restrictions. A lot of stuff will be denied. I'm not sure how much stuff will get approved. And we're talking about $500 million and or $500 trillion. I think it's $500 trillion.
$500 trillion in
half
projects?
$500 trillion. Yeah, $500 trillion at stake. $500 trillion. For the next 10 years.
What's $500 trillion between friends, right? Send us 1/100th of that and...
Send us your money.
It's my second appeal for money. You think...
Send
you
us
think
$1 billion. Anyway.
It's like PBS.
We can buy this studio in the corner
you.
Of
I
the University
the
Center.
I own everybody and everything with it.
We'll build the UC and we'll turn it into a ping pong room.
Right on. It's supposed to be. That's a whole other story.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
So people have been talking lately about how impressive the kids are. Because we had last weekend, we had the March for Life in Washington, D.C., which was organized by the students from Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School, the people who survived the latest in a long sideline of school shootings in the United States. And those young people have certainly been very, very impressive. I don't want to call them kids, although I'm probably old enough to get away with it now.
The youths, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, they are young people. And it's been, and it, the example of these students was mentioned by Arthur Potts as one of the reasons why he brought forward a private member's bill in the Ontario legislature to reduce the voting age to 16. And I think... In past years, there's unlike in past years, because this has certainly come up before, it's, and it seemed like kind of like one of those fringy things that fringe people and fringe parties will bring up. But, I mean, this is a liberal MPP.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are taking it seriously now, which is surprising in a pleasant way. Although you go online and go on Twitter, you still see, what do kids know? Kids are dumb and too young to blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well... There are a lot of adults who are too immature to vote, too. It's
the same old story from some of the old folkies, right? Those youngins don't know
the
nothing.
Olds, yeah.
But considering, and I'm sure you saw some of them, most of us saw a lot of the speakers on the weekend from the Parkland shooting.
I was leaning away. Yes, I did.
yes, indeed. When you see the And I think one of them was maybe 11 or 12 years old.
You mean Martin Luther King's granddaughter?
Is she Martin Luther King's granddaughter?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I saw the name. I didn't make the connection, but...
Yeah.
Well, she's a chip off the old block for sure. but, you know, presenting their ideas, well thought out, intelligent. They're obviously engaged, activists. There's no reason why, geez, Martin Luther King's granddaughter couldn't vote right now. And I know 11 is a bit young, I suppose. I'm pretty sure, and I think you as well, I think I could have, I definitely made an informed political decision at 16 years old. I think the goal of this is, and the study suggests that if people are engaged early in the electoral process, I remember having a mock election in our school because it was a real election going on, and it might have been grade six, or totally in grade six, like 10 years old or something. So
10 or 11.
All I remember is that everybody voted NDP, but the province didn't. So, and maybe that's why they don't want the youngins voting, because they always tend to swing left. And then when they get older, they vote for Doug Ford. No, I don't know. But anyway, in other places, in particular in Scotland, the voting age was lowered.
Scotland, Brazil, and Austria have all done it.
In several places. And with the Scottish example, it was lowered for the independence referendum. Now, that was seen as a bit of cynical political game, I think, by the SNP.
Sure.
The other parties accused them. They said, oh, you're just doing this because you want that vote. And it was like 100,000 people in a country of 5 million who were 16 and 17 years old were engaged in that election.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the end goal. And then they finally eventually made it permanent not long after that, and it was unanimous in the Scottish Parliament. That's all the parties, including the Conservatives, said, yeah, we should probably do this. So there was a bit of a softening there, and they've taken it on. And also, I was reading in Teen Vogue, where I go to for all my political information. There's a very good article.
There are worse sources than Teen Vogue.
It's excellent political coverage in some areas, and they were making the link between the student marches on the weekend and saying that there's four districts or cities in California that have given 16, 17-year-olds the vote, including Berkeley, which is a known sort of leftist hotbed or whatever.
Lefty,
but,
yeah.
So it's gradually happening. It starts with those four and then spreads from there probably. And I think the bill that was proposed here in Ontario will probably die in the order paper, whether it'll be revived under the whatever the redrawing of the seats after the election remains to be seen.
Well, yeah, Potts confessed that it's probably likely going to die when the writ is dropped, which we were talking about this last week.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be before. I mean, the budget was tabled yesterday. So it's as soon as the budget's passed, it'll be egg timer time before the writ is dropped.
Private members' bills notoriously just sort of fade.
Yeah.
Unless it's one of those all-party unanimous.
And even if it did, it would probably not go into effect before this coming election.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, Arthur Potts said it's a first step, and he's right. It's a good first step. It's, you know, putting legislation on the table and saying, not just like making it a campaign promise, and then because who knows what will happen with a campaign promise, but to actually, you know, put it down on paper and to say, you know what, let's make it happen, is bold.
And if I understand it right, I believe Andrew Weaver in BC, the Green Party leader, has put forward a private members bill about this as well, and Horgan isn't against it. Premier Horgan, they're willing to look at it. I know as we were talking about the pipeline, there's other obviously more pressing issues.
That government may fall too before it reaches legislature. But,
but at least it's on the radar there as well. So that's in two provinces of note that it's been brought forward. So.
And I think there's this stereotype that when you see kind of the reaction in Huffington Post, or they call it HuffPo, anyway, HuffPo collected
Teen Vogue
some
and
like
HuffPo, yeah.
collected some Twitter posts.
No one calls it Teen Vogue, sorry.
TiVo. That's something else.
That's what we'll call it.
Collected like various tweets about immaturity. I think people have this stereotypical view that like 16-year-olds get the vote, they're going to go into the ballot box and write in like Bart Simpson or Bodie McBoatface or what have
but
you.
But that's your right, isn't it? I mean, I know that
it's
sounds
your
ridiculous,
right.
but...
It's your right, but
someone's
I...
going to draw a doodle and then...
draw a doodle of a penis or something. But I like, for if you want to cause mischief, there are like easier ways to do that than registering to vote, getting your voter information card, going to the polling station and getting your ballot with your pieces of ID. There's like four or five steps to go and, you know, just to be a jerk and draw a picture on the back of a ballot to be an a-hole. I think the people whom this is going to appeal to are the studious ones.
Sure.
Who are the ones, and there's a comparison that could be made here about, you know, the students who have too good a time with the vibations.
Yeah.
And which is a relatively small percentage of young people who go here. A lot of people, young people who go here, are very studious. They go to their classes. They're doing their homework. They're getting their presentations ready, you know, studying for exams. They're involved in student government. They're involved in clubs. They're involved in the school paper.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some sort of activism, direct action. You know, and I think those are the people in the high school arena, the kids who are part of student government, the kids who are part of the school paper. Those are the kids who are going to be thinking about this seriously, and why the heck not?
Well, I tell you, that the last federal election, and there was a poll on campus. I mean, that is one of the longest lines I've seen here for anything, including lining up for a pub. So that's, you know what I mean? But that's a really, to me, that's a really good sign. And I think, you know, youth voter engagement is up. They always say, oh, they're notoriously bad for not voting. But there's been so many narrow margins, and I think that might be some of the reticence to do this. Is like, well, it's, you know, it's only 30 votes. It's like, if you have 30 votes from a 16 and 17 year old, you know, maybe perhaps that'll put you over the top. And I don't know if that, I mean, that shouldn't be the be all and end all, but there's just been so many squeakers that it's like, well, if you introduce this new body of people, what does that change the dynamic, obviously. But I think, somebody had made the comment, I think it was on Twitter, about, you know, so I can drive a 2-ton machine at 100 kilometers an hour on the 401 and you won't let me vote.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to play the taxpayer card either, but
folks rule taxpayers. Exactly, sorry.
There was an NDP. If I pay taxes, well, the point I was going to make was, if you're paying taxes,
sure.
I mean, I had my first kind of tax-paying regular workaday job at 15. If you're paying into the system,
and he's running the place by 16.
You betcha. I was out of my butt by no. You should be able to decide who's
child labor laws are killing this country.
Exactly.
I'm just
that was the every. Couple of days was a labor law violation at that job. I will write about it one day, but it was. I've seen the future. It's schlubbery. But yes, I was paying taxes then. It's like, if I'm paying taxes then, if I'm a taxpayer at 15, Doug Ford would love this line of discussion. And if we do get him on, I will ask him about it, actually, how he feels about it, because it's all about the taxpayer. So I don't know what I got for my taxes back then.
I think going along with this too, and I think it's worth exploring, is how we teach young people about civics and about government. And I think that is, you know, a sort of a well-rounded Canadian political education, I think, would certainly help it a lot. And I'm not saying, like, teach kids, like, this is what a liberal is and this is what a conservative is. I mean, like, teaching them the mechanics of government, like how stuff in government works, specifically municipal government.
Yes, your personal favorite level of government.
Yeah, sure.
The one you cover, at least. Yeah,
it's my jam.
Go political the man. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that in terms of how things work and what the various departments are and how a bill becomes a law, and I think that stuff, we've kind of gone off that.
They used to cover that in school. I don't know what it's called now, but believe it or not, the course I was in was called Man in Society. That's how old I am. Man in Society. And it was pretty much not just sociology, but it covered, you know.
The textbook said civil rights, : trouble ahead.
That's right. There's pages ripped out and they're like, we couldn't afford new books. But I know what we should do. We should put together a bunch of Facebook polls and, you know, then just take all the information and do something with it. Something useful. Something positive. Teaching people about civics in Man and Society.
We mentioned John Pierre Kingsley before, and he's actually come out in favor of this. And it's worth noting, too, that Canada once had a voting age of 21, 1970.
That was the drinking age, too, though.
Drink. But, I mean, that wasn't so long ago. I mean, it's getting more further away in the rearview mirror, but it wasn't so long ago. And I bet, I didn't get a chance to look it up, but I bet a lot of those same arguments were made about lowering the voting age to 18 versus lowering it to, or keeping it at 21, that, you know, kids were too immature. They weren't, you know, didn't have enough life experience. That was another weird one. It's like, well, you're in school, you know, you got friends.
Tell anybody that came back from the front in World War I that they didn't have enough life experience as an 18-year-old.
Well, tell any of these kids on Florida who are like they're on the front line that they don't have any life experience.
You're coming back from the battle, and it's like, well, sorry, kid, you can't vote for another 3 years or have a beer.
But
do you draw the line? That's
and I think question, Kingsley alluded to this in this interview he did, that, you know, that people said the same thing in 1970. So why not? It's, you know, there's more information now. Kids are more plugged in
all day.
And not just on Candy Crush, but, you know, we
giving away their information.
We have a discourse happening. Young people feel to an extent that things are kind of getting out of control, too. You know, they're expected by the time they enter high school, like 13 or 14, that they have a life plan all plotted out. And, you know, maybe they should have more of a say in terms of what the direction is before they get out of school and before directions are kind of set in stone. Anyway, just a thought.
Absolutely.
Just a thought, folks. Just a thought, folks. Okay.
Taxpaying students.
Enough impressions. Wrap up the show. That is it for this week's show. Just a reminder that Mayor Cam Guthrie will be here before April's end, because that local race starts on May the 1st, and that's almost barely a month away. So very exciting times.
It's coming like a steamroller. Wow.
Oh, it is. It is indeed. And you can steamroll over to opensourcesguelph.com to listen to this and past episodes. You can find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, if you're still on it. And you can go to Twitter at @OS_Guelph until they screw up. And then you can listen to past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. I will be back here next week. 2 a.m. the new time, or 2 p.m. I should say, the new time slot for end credits. And then you can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook still. Scotty Hertz also on Twitter. I blog at The Spanner Book. I missed it last week. There will definitely be something this week.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to send us a postcard, CFRU, 50 Stone Road East, Guelph, Ontario, attention, second floor UC, N1G2W1. Now there's something you don't hear
anymore. That's impressive. Send a snail mail.
Yeah.
Scotty went to the trouble of remembering all that off the cuff.
Use that postal code at the liquor store, too. They'll never find you. The end.
DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources Guelph. And we will see you then.